Hello family, hello friends. This is Helena Kintz. You're listening to Chasing the Truth and Uniqueness podcast, a podcast that is set to share love, knowledge, and teach us how to love our uniqueness by living a truthful life, helping you to discover your strength by accepting your weaknesses. This third part of my testimony, it's the last one. I'm gonna close this chapter of my testimony with this one. I know it's gonna be a word personally for someone who will listen to me right now, that this testimony, it's my story that God allows me to live, to experience, so I can encourage someone now. I can give hope to someone now. I can allow God to speak through me to someone right now who's going to listen to this right now. Understand that we can be in different environments, can be in a different country, but what each one of us going to experience will leave with God is not only particular, but it's also a gospel, a word that God wants to tell you that what you're going through will pass, will really come to pass. Just see how God has done for me, for someone else, in the same situation you're going through. On my second testimony, I shared that I was living in a dark environment. So, it's since my childhood. It wasn't just the first time. I have lived in dark places, mostly every time. What I mean by dark places is surrounded by toxic people, surrounded by people who don't have enough love, affection, as much as I was giving to them. Surrounded mostly by jealous and envious people. Surrounded by people who had not so much skills that I had, that God places me. Who had not that gift, talent that God places me, places in me. I was mostly surrounded by this kind of people. Remember that on my last testimony I shared with you, I grew up in environments where French wasn't the primary language spoken. So can you imagine that it was also my weakness moment, that when I was going through older children who had more, who were more fluent in French than me, I wasn't jealous. Instead, I was always coming near them, but they were like shame about me because I don't speak French. I wasn't speaking French well. Then the Lord is so good that He knows how He does things. That today, when I'm speaking French, I have heard many people where I worked previously in some companies who ask me, "Are you a European? Are you a white? Are you a white lady?" I said, "No, I'm not white. I'm Congolese and I'm black." I said, "Wow, you're speaking French like a white person." So when I got this kind of compliments, I didn't felt like honored. No. I said, "Wow, God, today people are saying my French is like in European, a white person. Wow, how that happened? How does it happen? How did it happen? People who lived with me in Kasavubu, in that environment, where I lived for 15 years, they know, they can tell that French wasn't perfect because we're mostly speaking Lingala. And even my English. So when I was in the United States, I went there with Lingala, mostly Lingala, in my words, in my mouth. French was few. I was really speaking French, not so much. And not perfectly. But I was going to school like that. Now, I came back in DRC with a few level, I mean, really low level of English. Whether I a little bit kept the accents, American accents, but my English wasn't also perfect. I still could make mistakes with the grammar, vocabulary. So how did I end up with this journey? And I'm here, some people still saying, oh, your English is good. I still think like my English isn't perfect. My English isn't perfect. I still can make some mistakes. But how did it happen that I just stayed 11 months when they took me back in Congo, in Kinshasa. 11 months. So understand that when I arrived there, it took me like 4-5 months to even grasp the accent, you know, the accent, and be able, you know, to do a little conversation with my classmates to say, oh, hey, can we meet tomorrow? To explain a little bit of something so I can be understood. But today, I have a podcast in English. This is amazing because people who witnesses my returning in Kinshasa can tell that my English wasn't perfect. Even when I was going to school, of course, teacher could understand my accent was like, wow, your accent is good. Why did you learn your English? So I ended up telling people, I just learned English here. People got confused. No, I've never met someone who learned English here in Congo and had this accent. So I was keep telling people that I learned my English here. Since school, here, people couldn't want to understand. So I was like, well, okay. Just I was giving like example of one of my friends. She has never been abroad before. But, you know, she found out herself hanging out with British people, you know, with white people who speak English. And that allowed her to practice English. So when I was, you know, I met her another day and then I was, oh, wow, your English is good. How come? How long have you been, you know, you have this, you're speaking like that? And then, yeah, Helen, you know, I was just, you know, happy. I was very glad for her. So this is this part of how God can do things in someone. I cannot take honor. I cannot, you know, glorify myself and say, you see, because I cannot myself understand how, what I'm doing and how I got here. How I got with the French, how I got here with the English, about with the podcast, sometimes I don't have any explanation. I just say Jesus Christ is good. He's good and he loves me so much. This comes to say that the most hectic and moving part of my life happens when I start escaping my mother's. My mother become like my enemy. So when she started treating me violently, you know, insulting me sometimes in front of people, when sometimes she just can ask me to do, you know, the household. So maybe I will delay. Maybe sometimes I will come, I will do it, and I will do some parts. You know, I was kind of like a little bit lazy of doing things, you know, right away. And another day, I will wake up early in the morning. I would do, you know, household, like, wow, like I got a jackpot. But this wasn't, you know, preventing her to keep, you know, being so harsh and tough with me. And I will remind her, I said, but Ma, but do you see, yesterday I was the only person who cleaned the house. And I clean it, even the part that you don't do sometimes, but I do it. But the other day when I don't do that, so I got, you know, just insulted. Why do you do that? She didn't have a word. She said, when you do that, it's good, but keep doing it every day. I said, if I have to do every day, don't I have something else to do? I have school. So I was giving just reasons sometimes. But she was still not being, you know, soft with me all the time. This attitude, you know, I was, and then she started like to refuse me food. So sometimes when she cook and I come from school, she said, there's no food for you. I said, Ma, how come there's no food for me? He said, no, there's no food for you. Go and find your own food. Oh, I was like, wow, what is this happening again today? It's like just like this. So she will wake up in the morning and she will be acting like this. So I was craving. And I was around like 16 years old. I was 16 years old. So my mom was still doing that. So I'll go to my father. My father was not the kind of person who talked too much. So my father will talk to her. And sometimes he will just, you know, confront her. Don't do this. I don't want you to, you know, to crave my children. Don't do that. And sometimes she will go out church and come back. You know, she didn't cook. And you know, there will have this kind of, you know, confrontation with him, with my father. So I was like, wow. Well, I said, Dad, anyway, and this, I have to go. So I left there. I went to live with my aunt, one of my aunts, and may her soul rest in peace, because she passed away. It's been like 5 years now. So, and she's a woman. She was a woman of prayer. So when I went to live at her place, I explained her. I said, I don't know, but I'm trying. She's like this. Sometimes she insults me in front of people. So this was really, really bad. And my aunt felt it. So that moment, my aunt was taking me to her church. You know, she was a Protestant and a fervent Christian, member of her church. So we were going after school. I would come back the Sunday, we would go at church. And I was the only her girl, because that auntie had only 5 boys. So the education that she gave to her boys was, first of all, respect, and secondly, helping, you know, assisting, always be generous. And the third thing that she taught her boys was prayers. So prayers was even the primary thing. So even with her husband, so we were there sitting. First of all, every morning when we wake up, she said, Helen, because I was sleeping with one of the last boy. So I was 3-4 years than him. So she said, you must pray every morning before you get out of your bed. I was like, wow, my God. You know, I never had this with my mother. I never had this in my house, because my father is not the kind of person who go to church sometimes, even though he believes in God, but he's not a prayer person. My mom is, she is, but she has never, you know, get to ask me, because I'm the elder of my family. My brothers, before we wake up? No. So it's like, wow, I felt something different. And eating, we had to eat like a family, everybody in the table. We must eat together. I was like, oh my God, where am I here? Because in my house there with my father, my mother, and my brothers, this never happened. So we were like the kind of kids, when mom cooks, you just bring your plate, God serves or she can serve you and go eat. So anyone can come and eat whatever he wants. So we don't really have, you know, a close time to talk or, you know, just to talk. So everyone will just, you know, away. So you do your own life. So this was preventing us, you know, like, to be close. And even when there were something negative going on, something bad, you know, even to raise the subject, it was just in the bad way. We just, you know, yelling, shouting, you know. So that aunt had kind of life that impacted my life totally. So she was the first person who introduced me to the perfect family standard. She was married with her husband more like 30 years. And you know, this kind of life impacted me, really. And we were there. I was really, I was pampered somehow. Because she didn't want me to touch anything. She was telling her boys, no, serve your sister, serve her. No, come, son, come sit to me, let's talk. He said, do you want water? She would call her boys to come and serve me. When it's food time, I said, no, mommy, let me go myself. And I want to do, you'd really want to do this? I said, yes, I want to do. So I was open to do it myself. Because the way I was treated was so good that I've never been treated like this with my own parents. And time passed. I think I stayed there for 3 weeks. And she said then, okay, now you can go. I have talked with your father. I think everything's going to be good. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, she talked with my father. She talked with my mother. She asked my mother to come and to talk. Then I think things went quiet. So I went back. So that time I was like, oh, well. Now school's ending. It happened that even my school time had, you know, encounters, difficult times. One day I was sick. You know, I stayed home lazy and couldn't, you know, move like for 2 weeks. So when I was ready to go back to school, I wasn't allowed to get back to school. Even though I paid my fee totally for the whole year. I was like, what? What is this happening? So this came in the point like, okay, I think I'm just tired. I need a job. I want to work. So I got this mindset. I said, I'm tired. Every time that I want even to have, you know, money pocket to buy something, I was lacking money, you know. 16 years old, I didn't have anything. So I was looking for job. I had this mindset for looking for job. So I moved again there. Then I went to live with my grandmother's house. And that where I met a friend of my cousin. You know, she was working today's one of the biggest telecommunication company. So, and I said, oh, well, don't you have any job in your company there? And one of my cousins said, no, she's joking. Don't give her a job. And I said, hey, I'm serious. I want to work. Any job you have there, give me, I will do it. And she looked at me, you know, I seems like a pampered lady girl. You know, sometimes I can have money. I can ask this. I can ask uncle, you know, because I came from a decent family. So honestly, I wasn't really lacking money. I could ask uncle, but that was not making me feel comfortable. I was so tired to ask money. My father lack money. It didn't have, you know, it wasn't financially stable. So immediately we diverted our needs to some other people's in the families. So for us to eat, for us to, even my studies was paid for from some a member of my families, of my father's. So my father wasn't able to take care of, to accomplish our needs, to fulfill everything we needed. You know, I was seeing my brothers, you know, lacking some stuffs. It was really sad. You know, because I'm giving a testimony, I just want to be emotional. So I asked that lady a job. I said, I really need a job. And she took me seriously. She called me tomorrow to come to the office. And I got the job. The job was to sell SIM cards. I was like, wow. She explained to me, she said, SIM cards cost 600 Congolese francs. So you're going to bring 351 to us, and you can keep the remaining was like 256. So you keep it for yourself. I said, what? So I have like 256 Congolese francs for myself. By each SIM card I'm gonna sell. I said, okay. And she said, you're going to start with 15 SIM cards today. I said, no problem. So, you know, I was well, you know, I had a really nice outfit. So now I started walking and asking people on the streets, hello, do you need SIM card? This is a SIM card. So they explained to me how I can sell it very quickly. So I had to explain the advantage, you know, the benefits of the SIMs, what is special inside. You know, the SIMs had free calls, you know, many things. Then I found myself selling like eight SIMs cards. And when I came back, I was like, okay. And she said, how many SIMs cards? I said, like eight. I said, oh, congratulations. At least you did something. But tomorrow you can come back. You can come back and you had more. So I think you're part of the team now. We'll see every day how you're doing. I said, really? Then I get back home with my money. You know, I was like, wow. I felt so good. And in 1 week, I gained $80. $80. So I was so happy. I called my father. I called my aunt, the one who taught me who really what really was kind of life in a family we should live. So I called her and she said, oh, that's really amazing. You should take one of your brother here and join you so you can teach him the kind of job you're doing there. I said, oh, yes, he can come. So one of his son came, and what he did, he was just so tired. He couldn't do that. He felt shame. He said, no, I just cannot walk around there and selling SIMs card. How are you doing this? I said, I love it. You know, I'm having my own money. So, you know, he's a boy, I'm a girl. And then he couldn't understand that me having this energy and going to sell SIM cards. So this moment was amazing. And then I get back to school, 17 years old, 18 years old. So when I get back to school, that's cool when I get. I think you can still also read my one of the articles that I wrote about Dream Has Come True on my blog WordPress. I also talk about this experience, how I got admitted in this school. So, you know, that time God allowed my mother to cool down a little bit. So I came back there and it was like, okay, now you have to study. And my father said, you know what? Just go and do this other jobs lately, like study hospitality. My mom said, no. My daughter is not going to study hospitality. She needs to graduate, you know, to have at least her college degree. But she didn't even finish her, I think it was, at that time, it was ninth grade. She didn't even finish it. How do you want her to do? I mean, what are you gonna do? So my mom did what she could do, and I got admitted in the 10th grade, the school. So and then if you read my article, I explain you how the Lord has has manifested inside me. So I was always the second of my classmate, the during the report of the periods. So when they were calling, students out of the first one who or the person who came, the student who came first, they were calling my friend, and then the second one was always me. So I was, kind of the girl that popular. I said, "Oh, she's smart." The whole school knew me. We're like, "Oh, she's the second, yes." And then you got applaud, you got this congratulation. So I was always keeping that place. Then when it was the end of the year, something else happened with my classmates. It was something that I didn't even experience yet. But then this thing of reputations started again during that time. So I started friend my classmates, talking about me, having relationship with the people of guy working in a this international organization, UN. And when I heard that, I was like, "What?" So I was friends with some girls there in my class, and the relationship was quite good. But one day, and she was taking me to her church. I really liked that church, the French, French church. I was spending good time with her. But then one day she came at school and she gave me one of her rings, and it was even her mother's ring, and she gave it to me. So she came in one day in front of everybody, and she, to take it back, violently from me. I said, "Hey, why are you acting like this?" Said, No, give me my ring. You hypocrite. You hypocrite." And I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah. So you hanging out with this kind of guys, white people, and you like this, you just quiet, you pretending." I said, "Me?" Then when I get close to her, and then she explained it to me, and some people told me, I heard that the people were bad mouthing about me, that I had relationship with this kind of white guys. And I was like, "Oh my God." So I love that period because I didn't have the time. I didn't even feel like the need to justify myself to explain, because most of my classmates were dating a guy, so they were not virgin, most of them, those girls. So I knew all of their story, but I was virgin. And I was 19 years old, so I was mostly listening to their stories, and they have never heard me with a story of that kind, or boys or everything. So I didn't have that. So then I understand that there was something that they are thinking, because they've never heard me with such stories. So I don't know. What did they saw me with it? So I could understand what really was happening. So that's really how, the kind of bad reputation, bad mouthing on my behalf happens in schools. And I really didn't pay give it attention. And I said, "Okay, if I give this attention, it's gonna be like, conflict. Let me just explain my friend that I'm not like this, and that's why she came and she took her ring for me like that." And we forget about it.
Then, you know, we were finished school and I still had this mindset to work. When I got my, you know, my college degree, I said, I don't know, my secondary school, so I wanted to work. Then the Lord has done something great again for me. So I got a job in one of the telecommunication company. And that's where things started to be like very, very crazy. But before I add this about how my professional life, without me even going to university, I had already worked in 3 companies. But before that, when we finished school, I got my degree, the church I was going, I met one of the friends that we lived in Kasavubu when I was, you know, the environment when I told you that there were witchcraft, everything. So I met him at church. I was very happy to meet him. And he said, why don't you join an intercession prayer on Tuesday? I said, what is intercession? He said, well, come and then you will find out. And that Tuesday finally arrived. And I said, okay. I was in the kitchen chatting with my mother. And I said, okay, let me get ready because I have been invited to join this intercession church. And mom said, yeah, you must go then. I said, oh, okay. It was already 2 p.m. and the prayer was at 4 p.m. So suddenly when I get back in my room, you know, to put my clothes on, you know, I caught up with the dizziness, you know, some kind of vertigo. I was like, oof, I felt like I was about to fall. And I said to myself, what is going on with me? You know, I shake my head. I said, no, it's nothing. Then there is this voice inside me. You know, we usually had that. So I said, no, I think this is the devil doesn't want me to go in this intercession prayer. And, oh, wait a minute. What is intercession anyway? I was like, oh, no. I have to go. So I thought about, you know, taking a French dictionary and understand this word. It was kind of like I've never heard this word before. So I took the French dictionary, and a French intercession means praying in a favor, in a behalf of. Praying in behalf of. I said, what? Praying in behalf of. I said, that's mean I'm going to pray for other people. I said, ah, interesting. I said, well, then I have to go. I have to go and find out how they're going to pray for other people. I keep thinking about it. So I said, I have to go. So, you know, I get back my strength together and I put my clothes on. But suddenly I was really feeling bad. I start feeling, you know, hot inside my body. Hot. You know, it was rising, you know. Oh, I was like, oof, I'm not feeling good. Then I said, let me walk a bit so I can get a taxi over there so I can warm up a little bit. So I was going, I was walking, not feeling good. Finally, I reached the church. I met that friend. And he said, oh, wow, you came. I was, yeah. You know, something happened to me just before. I'm not feeling okay, but, you know, I'm here. I said, oh, glory to God. I'm sure you will feel okay when you, after prayer. I said, amen. It's kind of like he couldn't even, you know, believe that I will be there. I came and introduced me to the pastor. It was the pastor of the youth program and leading that intercession group of prayer. And he introduced me to him. He said, well, the intercession prayer is not happening here at church. You can get in the bus. So we're going to one of a church member who gave us her living room. That's where we're going to pray. I said, that's okay. Then
I went together with that pastor. So we arrived like 10 minutes before. And she said, Sister Helen, because you're new, I think you're going to watch us how we're setting up the places. I said, no, Pastor. I think in the presence of God, nobody's new. I would just do the same thing with you. He said, oh, God bless you. So I start, you know, setting up these chairs before everyone comes. And when the prayer started, people were praying and I was, you know, I felt tired. Suddenly, I couldn't pray. I was sitting, some of them were praying, and when the prayer is going just, you know, higher and higher, I was so uncomfortable. And I felt so hot again inside, thirsty. So I ran out from the room. I couldn't even realize when people were watching me. So I ran out to go and look, you know, seek for something to drink. And I met the bodyguard out there. Quickly, I asked him. I was very tempered, you know, agitated. I said, please, 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 do you have anything, something to drink, something to drink? Please, 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 please. So he handed me his bottle of water. I was like, what? This is his bottle of water. I have to drink it. So I drank. When I drank, I felt like, oof. I sat there. I said, I'm not feeling okay. He said, Mama, but you can sit there. I said, no. I have to go back inside because if I don't go back inside, they will feel like I'm not really comfortable. But actually, I was not comfortable. The Lord is good because once I step in again in the room, the pastor calls me. He said, my sister, come here. You have a glory. You have a great glory. But someone in your family doesn't want you to be here. Wow. I was like, oh my God, who is this person? You know, I didn't really take it spiritually. I wanted to find out physically, who is this person? I said, wow. So I got curious about that. He prayed for me. Well, the prayer finished. I went back home. That night, something started happening in me. The heart I was feeling inside now comes out. So I was feeling hot. I was feeling thirst. You know, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't move. I was feeling very bad. I was feeling bad. That was Wednesday. Wednesday, I said, no. I have to go to the hospital. Then I went to the hospital. They said the result only one day after. So that means Thursday. Oh, yeah. I was really feeling bad. I was feeling so hot. Hot in all my body. But when you touch me, no fever. But I was just feeling hot inside. Thirst. Like I'm drinking water. But there's nothing. I'm drinking water, but I still need water. Thirst, hot, and, you know, it's kind of like, I'm tired. Like, you know, all my energy they're taking out my energy. You know, the strength of my body was taken away. I was feeling tired. Suddenly tired. I'm talking with a slow voice like, so I was asking myself, what is happening with me? And the same voice spoke to me on Tuesday, said, I think this is the devil. I think this is Satan. He didn't appreciate me going to this intercession prayer. I didn't understand myself, where am I getting this kind of voice? I said, no. No, I'm not going to be sick. No, I'm not going to be sick. The Thursday, I went to get my results. The nurse said, no, there's no doctor. Come back later. I said, come on. I'm walking from there to there. I'm not feeling good. You asking me to come back again? Please, madam, I need my result today. So I got a kind of conversation with the nurse. I said, what is this? You gave me the time I came and then you don't have my results. And I'm sick. I'm not feeling good. And the nurse seems like she doesn't care. I said, you give me you know, just give me a prescription. How am I? And then she was not able. I said, give me my prescription. I'm going to find out myself outside there. She gave me the prescription. I bought the medicine and I just read a notice and I took the first pill. And on Friday, the morning, I had to split everything out. So I was vomiting. Started vomiting in the morning. Vomiting. And then so my brothers went to school, my dad to work, my mom was there, and then she went out. So I stayed alone at home in that condition. So I was just running around at home, feeling really bad. I started walking like, you know, an angry lion, you know, like a dog, you know, so a dog who need food to eat, you know. I was like, oh, alone, nobody. And then I went in my parents' room, so I fell in their room and I turned my head, you know, facing the seal, the hell. So I started saying to God, God, please, God, please, no, please, God, don't let me die, don't let me die. Some minutes later, my mom and my sisters came back and she saw me there. The face was like, whoa, this girl didn't eat. I said, hey, why are you looking like this? Look at your mouth. It's so dry. I said, no, did you eat? I said, no, I can't eat. I said, hey, you need to eat something. You don't look good. And she asked my sister to bring me something to eat. I mean, to buy what we call here, like cassava. In our language, we call it chikwang. And she had chicken. So the moment when I saw chicken, it was like, oh, this is food. So I started eating like a dog. I ate it. One bite, two bites. I got cramped on my hip. I was sitting in a chair. Suddenly, I stopped because my body just moved quickly on my left. And then I couldn't get back. And I was like, I cannot revert back myself. Please help me. I was, no. You know, my hip, I moved left with all my body. You know, like the clock. When you have the clock, this traditional clock. When the clock is doing ding, 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 moving. So I moved right and I got blocked over there. And my mom didn't really pay attention. I said, Mom, I can't. I said, oh, just get back yourself. In your back straight. I said, I can't get straight. I can't move. I can't get straight back. And when I was speaking, it took like 15 seconds. Boom. I get back straight. I said, oh, what is this? And the time I was saying, what is this? It gave me again on my left. Just like the clock does. Cling, cling, cling. So it started doing like this. And my mom got scared. He said, hey, what is this? I said, no, I don't understand what is happening to me. So I was moving left, right, left, right. Suddenly, just by myself like that. And I wanted to stay. I said, okay. Come. We must go to the hospital. I said, okay. And I wanted to stand up. Suddenly, it was my feet. My feet, you know, got up by itself, by themselves. My foot got up and I was like, hey, my foot, I cannot put them down. I said, Pujo, I can't. And my sister came, tried to put my foot down, but nothing. Suddenly, it was put it down by itself. I was like, I was scared about what I was seeing on my own body. I was like, God, I immediately started crying. I was like, God, please. What's going on? Please, what is going on with me? What's going on with me? And the time when my mom got a taxi, the taxi man, and she asked me, we're going to
because we were living in apartments, so we must go down. So I need to take the steps, the stairs there. And when I stood up, I want to go down the stairs. My whole body, my back got just, you know, to my knees. My body, my back, my front got, my head got there to my knees. So it's like I was completely, you know, it's like my hip got, I don't know how can I explain this. And my mom was so scared that she asked this. You know, it's where like I got folded, you know. I folded my head, it arrived to my knees. And she was so scared, said, "What is this?" And that man, the taxi driver, took me. And I couldn't, you know, I was folded. My head was to my knees. So I cannot get in the taxi like normal person, you know, step my leg, no. So I was just putting there. It was very, very strange. Then we arrived in the hospital. They put me in a wheelchair. And they start asking, I can hear the nurses who took me. So I was in the emergency room. So they asked my mom, "What happened?" And she started explaining, "What did you give to her?" I said, "Nothing. I just, you know, she was vomiting. Everything happened." I said, "Wow." So we arrived at 8 p.m. She was driving last Friday on her way to Cincinnati on a snow-white Christmas Eve. Because the door were open, so I could see them. And I said, "Mama, we must pray." So my mom kneeled down and with her hands up high, and she's praying. She's praying, "God, this is my Hail Mary," and she's praying. So, and then I saw the two nurses putting their hands on me, praying. What happened is, suddenly, this kind of cramps left all my body, like for 5 minutes. I mean, if I can remember, it was less than 20 minutes. It stops. And immediately, when it gets back, on my neck. Yes, my neck here. So my head was folded to my chest, like not really chest, but to my I think we call it the lobe in French, lobe. I think in English also it's lobe. So my head, my thin was reaching my lobe. My chin, excuse me, was reaching my lob. So immediately my head folded to my chin, so you understand that I can't breathe. So I was like, when boom, my chin folded there, I was like, I can't breathe. And the nurse came and she tried to pull my head up. And my head was just blocked there, couldn't move. And my mom said, "Hey, what is it again?" I was like, "I can't breathe." And it was taking like 10 to 15 seconds. And my head got up by itself. Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know whoever have been through this, but let me tell you, this was a demonic attack that today I'm going on YouTube and seeing all these kind of things.
I said, oh my God, I will do this. So my body was just like in movement. It's like manipulated by someone. Manipulated. You seeing my body just moving by itself, moving like this way. So, and when it got to my chest, it was the end. It's like, here I'm gonna die. I'm going to die here because I can't breathe like for 15 seconds. It's like, I can't breathe, please, please. I was just, you know, I was just moving my hands to tell them, you know, to move and help me. Let me pull my head up. I could see in those nurses, there were no strength in them anymore. Then they stopped praying. I was looking to them with a really sad eyes. And today, I maybe have never met them again. I always thought like going there again and thank them. But I don't know. I really don't know, but God is good. I remember my eyes. I had the eyes of like, I'm dying. I'm dying. What is happening with me? There's no one here to help me. And there is this voice, you know, I heard my mom's praying. I said, no, my daughter, no, she's not going to die. And then she's dying. What is happening? Because my head was just, I can't breathe. I was just, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. They were just praying. They were so tired. And sometimes they just put their hand there and they don't even trying to pull it because my head wasn't pulling up. And I stopped praying. I said, God, please. I said, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. I started declaring it. I'm not dying. So once my head got pulled, I take time to breathe. I was like, So I take time to breathe. It was like for 2 seconds only. I had to breathe and my head was down again. So there was the doctor came from the pediatric, I think, room. That's how they told me. When he came, he saw me with his all this. He said, just give her the anesthesia. So they put me under anesthesia. Then I had to sleep. So to give me a little bit of rest. So when I slept, during my sleep, the doctor gave them a medicine to go and look for. My cousin, with 7 months pregnant, she's the one, because she's a woman of prayer. She's the one who testified and said, you must pray your entire life because you were dying. The nurses couldn't do anything. They were saying you got cold. Your body, all your body was cold. So you were just like dying. And when your doctor came, he gave us the medicine to go look for this medicine. And she told me the story of her mother. I said, my mother, I always remember that. When someone is dying and you're going to look for medicine urgently and you don't find it in 2-3 different pharmacies, that means that you're losing the person. And they told you go urgently to look for this medicine because when the anesthesia is ending, she must immediately take this medicine. So she was telling me that. She said, we went to 2-3 and then we went very far downtown there to find your medicine. And this medicine cost us so much. And when they came back, I was up. So they wake me up, sorry. And I get this medicine. The doctor was there. And he told me, he said, take only one pill. He looked at me. He said, I don't think that you will need this medicine again. I really don't think. But take only one pill. If you want, you can still keep the plaquettes, the tablets, all the tablets. You can keep it. But I really doubt that this will happen to you again. I was like, okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. I said, and then I had this medicine. I remember the medicine names was Artane, spelled like A-R-T-A-N-E, Artane. In French, it's Artane. So, and the morning, I remember I was plugged. I was infused, I'm sorry. I was filled with 5 bags of waters. And it never happened to me in my whole life. It was the first time. You remember I was telling you I was just feeling thirsty and I didn't have energy. I was just like feeling drinking water. I was thirsty. I couldn't even, you know, I'm feeling like I'm drinking water, but nothing happening. So then I was vomiting. When I vomit. My energy was so tired. So they infused me 5 bags of water. The only thing that they did to me, 5 bags of that water. Of course, they put, you know, medicine inside. And that medicine, drugs of Artane. And the morning, the nurses were smiling at me. They were saying, oh, look at you, you're smiling. Oh, so you like just joyful like this. So if you do remember how you came here, don't come back here again. You understand? Don't come back. I was like, oh, so I was just laughing. And I was going with my mother back home. And I think I stayed home like for maybe a week. I get back strength and I get back to church. I gave my testimony, one-on-one to the pastor. I said, this is what happened to me. He said, God saves you. You are loved by God. God saves you. They really, really wanted you to die. And I was like, wow. I said, you see? And he said, glory to God that you are here. So we kept you in prayer during all this time. I was like, thank you. Thank you so much. And yes, I get back to the intercession group. Now, what is shaking here is that was in 2009. I got a job. As I told you, in a telecommunication company. And after that, I had to... Oh, wow. There are so many things that happened in my life that I won't be able to tell you all of that like this. What, I lost my virginity with a guy who is very famous today. He's I remember that he told me that he's French nationality, but his father is American, his mother is Jamaican. So I met him in Kinshasa. So you know, I was just following up. I was like, he was not the kind of guy, he just came for business trip in Kinshasa. So we just following him. So I was like, what do you want with me? What do you want? He said, no, I want you. I said, no, you don't want me. I'm sure you just want sex. And he was like, no, what are you saying there? I said, yeah, what would you really follow, like girl like me? So you have all these girls there, you know, they are even, you know, prettier than me. He said, no, Helen. So if I'm not following them, they may not be special than you are. I said, yeah, that's right. So he had this train, this power, and this kind of words that were, you know, that was kind of like, okay, let me just get close to this guy. I don't know. So, and he loved that the way that I like to write. And because he was a music compositor, a producer, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to write a song and I'll just show him. And he gave me this kind of attention. So he followed me for several days. He was calling me. But I really felt like there is nothing serious here. But I was kind of like, I was kind of like curious how this guy, he came from United States. And it's not, you know, the life he has, how he is. How can you follow a girl like me? So I was kind of like, you know, flattered by that. But I didn't get influenced. So one day, he really insisted that I come to visit him. So it was during the night. I was kind of like a bit hesitating. So I visited him. And I said, here I am. You insisted that I come to visit you. He said, you staying? I said, I'm staying where? Oh, no, you're staying. You're sleeping here. I said, I'm not sleeping here. Who do you think I am? I'm not a prostitute. I said, so why did you came here? I said, what? So you know, I was just sure that you were calling me, you know, just for sex. Said, no, 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 not stop for that. I just want to spend time to talk with you. I said, you want to spend time to talk with me during the night when everybody's sleeping and me sleeping here in your place? So I had this kind of argument with all the men that I was meeting. So this is why I kept my virginity until my 20 years old. So, oof, this guy, you know, was kind of like very surprised. So he couldn't believe that I was virgin. So I said, oh, but why do you have this all these kind of friends? I said, I don't choose my friend based on what they, the what kind of the life they have. I'm friend who have with whomever I want. But then what they do doesn't influence me to do the same things that they do. I said, Helen, you're intriguing. I said, yes, indeed. Then that's why I said, oh, wow. So he said I was mysterious. So that day I get back home, you won't believe I did spend the night. I spent the night because the conversation was so deep with him that he insisted that I stayed with him. But the trick was he wanted me to stay there. Finally, maybe I'll just give myself. But I spent the night with him in the same bed. Nothing had happened. He insisted. I said, don't touch me. If you touch me, I'm really going to scream here. So no, don't do that. Don't do that. I said, yes. So you just ask me to stay, to talk. Okay, we're going to talk. So that's really what happened. And the next morning, I was like, wow. And he said, what are you going to say to your house? And I said, I stayed in my grandmother's house. So that's it. When I left, I was, I regretted, you know, of that night. I get back, I think he felt it. And I told him when I was leaving, I said, I will never come back. I said, I won't come back in here again. And I'm sure you won't call me again. He said, oh, Helen, why are you saying this to me? I just left. But it was like 7 p.m. And it was 7 p.m. I was with a friend and telling her the story, what happened to me last night with that guy. And he said, Helen, you sure you didn't really do anything with that? I said, I didn't. He was even very mad because staying with him and didn't be able to touch me. I didn't allow him to do that. So suddenly when I was speaking to that girl, he called me. I was like, what? He's still calling me. And I was like, you see, he's calling me. Then he called me to apologize. I was like, wow, I was shocked. I said, this guy knows really how to get me. He apologizing to me? I said, oh, I'm sorry if you didn't. Oh, I was like, what? So I felt like a little bit special. I said, yeah, really? I'm kind of like special. This guy is apologizing. Doesn't need to do that. And I said, you calling me just for that? He said, yes, I just call you to forgive me, you know, for everything that happened. Well, bye. Whew. I was like, wow, okay. So what happened is he kept, you know, like chatting with me. At that time, we were using BBM, you know, BlackBerry. So just hi and something like that, you know, always with friends was telling me, Helen, you're just so tough with yourself. This guy, you know, this kind of guy, he's really coming to you and you're still, you know, doing your thing. Oh, you're going to miss things. So I had cut off. My friends were telling the same thing. We said, Helen, just try to open up yourself a little bit. Just try this. So the friends who knew that I knew that guy, finally, you know, mouth people speak. You will speak to this friend and the friend will tell. I said, did you tell this story? I said, yes, I told her. I said, you shouldn't. Now people are thinking that I still have something. Now people are, you know, people, I got influenced by people giving me like strong, you know, arguments. They say, Helen, open up. Open up, open up. Try to leave. Try to see the good side. Maybe this guy, he will do this for you. Said, this guy won't do anything. of friends, you know, I had voice of friends, like, the advice they were giving me was kind of like, they wanted something good for me. So for all that, seems like, okay, I just give it a thought, but I didn't decide yet. And suddenly, you know, I found myself thinking too much. I was like, okay, what am I gonna do now? What am I gonna do now? What am I gonna do? Then, because I really needed massive, you know, advices, if I can, you know, open up to this guy. I don't know why, you know, people were saying like something marvelous for me, because he was a famous guy, you know, he's known, you know, he's hanging out with American celebrities, he's famous, you know, and he is close and is working with one of the biggest American singer. So people knowing that, me being this guy following me, was like, wow. But I told them, I was giving strong advice. I said, this guy, if he really likes me, he would have come to my place, but he never came in my house. He just giving a reason that he's protecting me, because if I comes there, you know, people will seem like, oh, I was like, no. But he said he was sending other guys to come and check me out. You know, it's like, it was kind of like spying on me. You know, yeah, asking people to come and see me. So, it happens again one day when I was around there with all the guys who were working with him. Where, you know, guys always hanging out sometimes. So, and he just asked me to, I didn't go to the office, so I stayed down. So he called me, said, why, Helen, why did you do, you know, come upstairs in the office? I said, myself, because I didn't want to come. He said, oh, really? Because I didn't want to see him. So I was not comfortable to go in the office anymore. So he felt like bad. He said, oh, like, really, you are running away from me. So I said, no, I just didn't feel comfortable to come there. So he kept on, you know, calling me, asking me, you know, talking to me, confiding things, telling me everything. What was really funny, you know, was telling me everything, showing me his green card, his gold card, his American card. He's like, one day I asked him, I said, why are you showing all these things? And he said, Helen, you are not even, you know, impressed. I said, why would I be impressed? I said, all these things are things on her tier. He said, when you're gonna die, you will leave all this thing. He said, oh, don't say that. And I was like, yeah. So I think the voices, I really didn't listen to voices of people, but I listened, the last person I really listened, who put me like some kind of, he put me in safe place. When he told me, he asked me, he said, Helen, why are you keeping your virginity? And I said, what is this question? He said, how long are you going to keep this? You know that you can be sick if you're not doing it. Why are you keeping it? So the way he asked it, oh wow, the devil is, no, devil is a big, great manipulator. The question he asked was kind of like, why? So I found myself reason, I forgot suddenly that the main reason I was keeping my virginity was for God. And secondly, for my own value, honor. I was all the time telling my friends that you dating, so you sleeping with this man, what is the respect of your own body? So I always had this mindset that I will only sleep with a man who will marry me. But then that day when he asked me that, he was like, for what? So I was, that was the day where, you know, I didn't have an answer suddenly. Didn't have any really answer to reply to him because he kept asking me that. So that day, it sounded like, you know, he was right. So it happens like that. And I regret it. And I went to God. I asked God to forgive me. I cried to God. I cried myself. And I found myself with this verses. With the verse of in Deuteronomy 22 from verses, if you read from verses 13, but I find myself with verses 18, which says that if a man took the virginity of a woman and doesn't marry her, he should pay, you know, he should pay. I think bargain. It should pay a fine. That's the word. So I start crying with that verse. I said, God, this guy took my virginity and didn't marry me. You know, he just took it like this. So I was praying. And that's where I felt the forgiveness of the Lord. He opened doors for me. I had a job. I restarted life. And I decided to really stop, you know, this kind of life, you know, listening to this kind of friends who still were going to the nightclubs. While I stopped to go to nightclubs, I didn't go to hang out with the same friend I had before. I just stopped. So that's really what happened. And when the Lord visited me through one of my supervisors when I joined in that company, he had a prophecy message for me from the Lord. So he asked me to join him, to speak with him. He said, I feel like you pray too much. I was passing near you and the voice of the Lord speak to me. And he asked me, are you married? I said, no. I was 20 years old already. And then he said, so do you have a fiancé? I said, no. So do you have a boyfriend, a man that you like? I was like, well, okay. If you have a man that you like, you love him, pray for him. Just pray for him and you'll see what God will do for you. Well, I said, oh my God, I'm going to pray with this for this guy. I don't know. So it took me like several days, I mean maybe 3 or 4 days, to decide to take time to pray for him. So then I stopped praying. One day I couldn't pray. I stopped thinking about all the events, everything happened with him, and I stopped crying. And while I was crying, I asked God to forgive him. I just said, God forgive him. God forgive him. Help him. Change his life. Change his life. Lord, please, may your Holy Spirit visit this guy. Please, Lord, forgive him. I did it like two several nights because I usually wake up around 3 a.m. the night. 3 a.m. during the night, I wake up. So when I wake up, I pray. So I was praying, and the third days of that praise, I was praying for him, crying out to God to forgive him. I was feeling the pain that it's kind of like he abused me. So he didn't really take me seriously. He just took my virginity and didn't marry me. And I was asking God to forgive him. And that other night, I had a dream.
where I was like an angel, because I was asking God. I said, God, help me to help. I mean, allow me to help this guy to come to you so you can change his life. Forgive him. Allow him to stop doing this, to abusing all the girls. You know, I was just praying like this. So that night, I had a dream. And that dream, like, I was like an angel. He couldn't see me. So I was seeing this guy coming and want to go in his room. Once he opened the doors, him and I, we saw when he opened the doors, he wanted to step in. He stopped. I started screaming, shouting. I said, no, don't go in. Don't step in. Don't go get in the room. Don't get it. I was just screaming. Because there was voice coming out from his window. The window was open. And there was a curtain was red. And there was someone with the, you know, the how you call it, a ribbon. The band, you know, just flowing out, the ribbon, yes. On his window, you know, the window was like, oof, you know, flipping out and in. And the voice is coming out the window. You want to be part of us, come. You want to be part of us, come. Then he stepped. And on the other side, of still in the room, there was a map, a mat. And on this mat, there were different colors of candles. Orange, red. You know, on the mat was red. So the voice were calling him, you want to be part of calm. You want to be part. So I start shouting. I said, don't go. But, you know, I was an angel. I was up there, you know, wings. So he couldn't listen to me. So I woke up in the middle of the night, was just freaking like, oh my God, what is this? I felt so bad that I didn't have the strength to tell him, because we kept contact. I didn't have the strength to tell him. So I went 2 years later. We were still in contact on BBM. So I texted him, because a brother of my church said, it's been 2 years, you never told him. You would have maybe saved this guy. But it's not too late. If not too late, you can tell him. So then I talked to him. I said, hey, I have a message from God for you. He said, well, okay, tell me. Then he was already back in the US. He was already back since. So he said, yeah, tell me. So I said, here's what I had. It's been 2 years ago, and I'm sorry that I didn't tell you that. That day, I told him my dream. He cut contact. Didn't want to talk to me anymore. So I kept on, you know, following up how he's doing on social media, on Facebook. Wow, what I saw was like, it was the kind in another man. All his body was covered with tattoos. All his body. Face tattoos, kind of tattoos that you find in an occultistic, you know, membership. And I touched my body. I said, God, I'm sorry, I failed. I'm sorry, I failed. I was crying. I started crying. So this is really another part of my life that the devil came again in my life to point, you know, to place men that were destined to be in an occultistic, you know, circle, to just come near me. They were men with powerful men. You know, they were powerful, very smart. They were, yes, financially stable. Some of them rich. So this only the kind of men were coming to me. And when I had this confirmation of this prophecy that the devil just appointed occultistic men to come to me. Wow. The Lord loves me so much. I didn't abandon him. So I kept my path on going to church, serving a church intercession. And God keep blessing me, giving me jobs. So I had my jobs and... You know, the time was just going on, and
in 2014, that's now how I'm gonna end this testimony here. One of my, a member of my family on my father's side, had a Parkinson's disease. Actually, what I didn't tell you about the disease that, the medicine Artane that I took in 2009, it was Artane. Let me read for you. Artane is a disease for, it was exactly Artane 5 milligram. 5 milligram. And, oh God. Yeah. I am just trying out to, I just want to read for you here the notice. What is exactly Artane? So Artane is a disease. For Parkinson disease, the syndrome of Parkinsonian, you know, with the treatment of neuroleptic, you know, treatments. So, this is what the medicine, what was happening to me that time when my body was having this kind of movement, you know, because I was having, like, my hands were shaking sometimes. My hands were shaking. And sometimes when I'm speaking, I was, like, you know, losing my the ability to speak correctly. So I already, you know, throw away that drugs because 1 month later, I didn't have these symptoms again. I didn't have these kind of cramps again. So before I throw it away, I read the notice. So when I read the notice, we're saying that this disease is a Parkinsonian disease, treat neuroleptic, you know, syndromes, Parkinsonian. And I went on internet, and internet saying this disease only, you know, touch old people, like more than 70 years old. So I asked myself, what is this Parkinsonian disease doing in my life, oh Lord? How did I have to split, to spill this medicine? Wow. Well, I just thank God. I thank God that everything that has happened to me, it leads me to grow my faith. Instead of me being tired and abandoning God from the dark places that I've been, the demonic attack who didn't want me to serve the Lord, to be in the family of Christ, and from the devil attacking my relationship with my mother, taking me away, putting me away, separating me from my family. Oh, wow. And attacking my schools, my relations, reputations. But all these things, and even my jobs, because either when I was having jobs all the time. So it happens that day, in this time when the devil attacked my professional life. I start having people at work who stand just like this, hate me. They will do their work, making work to just, you know, spoil my work, or to just ask for my leave, you know. But at the same time, the devil was destroying everything that the God was giving me. The God was more powerful, because in the other end, he was protecting me. you were still allowing me to leave, to have a bread, you know, to go to church, to pray. God was still putting me on this path. So the battle still there. The devil is still there. But on this end, why I'm ending this testimony, there are many, plenty testimonies that we're still going to give, because still Christ is there. The devil is still there also. He won't stop, you know, like coming in and troubling our life. But what I want to tell you is this, I'm still here. With all these things that I've been through and where no friends, even the friends that I told you I went to school with them, no one kept contact with me anymore. No one needed to know what I was doing anymore because they have their own life. They don't really care about what me. But so friends for completely forget me. And sometimes I'm the one reaching them, but they don't, they just don't, they are not just, you know, there. So I always remind myself where I came from with God, how he saved me, how he's been with me from different disease that I, that caught my life, that the devil came to deposit in my life. But God has saved me from all that. All that. I've been saved, healed completely. So when I'm thinking about all this, reputation, my virginity taken away, and then I said, God, I was so happy that, no, I just want to give my to the man who gonna marry me. But I deceived you. God, please forgive me. So it didn't end there. It happens again, but the Lord is still so good that I don't want to deceive him anymore. So it's been so many, it's been so many years now. I don't want to deceive God. I'm still working on me being perfect. I mean, a good image of Christ, better person everywhere I go, every with whom I am surrounded with. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for the time you had to listen to this last part of my testimony. I thank you amazingly, and I pray that the Lord fill you with the faith. So you must have faith. The faith in Christ will save you. Wherever you go, wherever you're going to be, faith will save you. Believe only in Jesus Christ. Place your total hope in him, and he will open doors for you. I may not had the opportunity to get my virginity back, but I had still had the opportunity to not fall like that anymore. So thank you. Thank you to you. And I pray God bless you again in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. And that we use this sister Helen O'Kins from Chasing the Truth and Uniqueness podcast. You will listen to the last part of my testimony. Bye. See you.